Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. Blue Dot Northumberland is an organization raising concerns over the proposed Wesleyville Nuclear Generation Station. The group believes there hasn't been sufficient consideration on a number of levels. In this interview, spokesperson Ralph Torrey outlines several key concerns, along with the financial risks to Ontario power generation and ratepayers, as well as Northumberland County's character and infrastructure. Take a listen and see what you think about this group's position as this multi-billion dollar project begins. I'm so pleased to have with me today Ralph Torrey, a spokesperson for Blue Dot Northumberland. Welcome to Consider This Northumberland.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
The Blue Dot Northumberland group has expressed significant opposition to the new nuclear generation station proposed for Wesleyville. Can you summarize the number one big picture concern your organization has with it?
Well, I have to clarify right off the bat that Blue Dot Northumberland is not a monolithic organization. There are a lot of different perspectives in the organization. And our concern at this stage with the Wesleyville nuclear plant is not really outright opposition. It's that there hasn't been sufficient consideration of whether this is needed. Obviously, there's concern over its impact on the local economy, which is not all positive. There's concern over the nuclear dimensions of the plant, which is definitely not all positive. And then there's an underlying concern about whether this kind of megalithic plant is the right direction for Ontario to be going in its electricity system. And these three different areas of concern are held in different proportions by members of the group. But I don't think it's fair to say at this stage that we're outright opposed. We're a science and evidence-based group of citizens in the area that are concerned that the magnitude of this plant is going to have implications that merit a much more careful and deliberate consideration of whether it's really needed, what the alternatives are. Have the renewable energy and efficiency alternatives been sufficiently considered, for example? And so what we're really trying to do is not so much oppose the plant directly as engender a conversation and provide education within the community, because we're just getting one side of this story from OPG. And that worries me, because there's definitely two sides to this. Any large, enormous, I mean, this would be the largest nuclear plant in the world if they get approval to go ahead with the whole thing. That's not something that we should be rushing into. And I'm afraid that's what's been happening. The period of time for the public to respond to the initial idea was very short. And the government is just declaring that it has to have this plant. It's not really showing the evidence for why it's a better idea than the alternatives. So Blue Dot is really trying to represent and advocate for a community-wide, a region-wide discussion, because this plant will affect everybody in Northumberland and beyond, for that matter.
Before we go much further, could you tell us about your group, Blue Dot Northumberland?
Well, the history of Blue Dot goes back to David Suzuki, who formed a network of organizations called Blue Dot across Canada a number of years ago to advocate for environmental rights to be embedded in the Canadian Constitution and so on. And that organization had a finite lifetime. It largely achieved its objectives. But the local chapter that had formed here in Northumberland decided to carry on and does so. And so basically, it's a group of of citizens that share a set of values around the need for an ecologically sustainable future, where we protect the environment, and where we do that in a way that is just and equitable for all the citizens in the community. Those are the values that really hold Blue Dot together, and underlie our concern about the process around this nuclear plant.
Can you share some of the accomplishments your group has achieved since it was formed in 2018?
I'm not the best person to answer that question, Robert, because my involvement with them has been more recent. But they've been involved in the preservation of agricultural land. They've been involved in it when it was still part of the Suzuki Network in a number of national campaigns for environmental protection. But I know that there's a list of other things that they did before I joined them, and I'm not the best person to go down that list, I'm afraid.
Your organization and several individual members filed concerns with the Impact Assessment Agency of Canada. One issue raised is the potential for financial risk. Can you explain what that means?
Well, the financial risk, there's a number of different levels to that. You have to understand, and I think it's very hard for people to get their head around this, especially with, as I said earlier, the one-sided nature of the information that is out there. But this plant is probably, if it gets approved, we're looking at something in the order of $200 billion investment that would involve a construction period that would go on for 10 years or more, and which would really change the economy and probably the culture of Northumberland County in a permanent and irreversible way. This is a classic boom and bust situation that we're facing here, where a very large construction project would come into the county for a number of years. It would put pressure on infrastructure. It would put pressure on the local tax base. It would drive up local wages, which would be a difficult challenge for farmers and local businesses. It will bring jobs and it will bring money to the county, no question, just like a hurricane will bring rain. But it's a very intense and overwhelming prospect to think of a project of this size coming into Northumberland County. And so the risk is, it's not just straight financial, but there is also just a straight out financial risk. Aside from the vulnerability of the local tax base and the pressure that it will put on infrastructure and social services and wages and all the rest of it, there is the risk at the higher level that it will bankrupt OPG and it will drive up our electricity rates. And this is not so much a risk at the local level as it's a risk at the provincial level. We already have in this province a situation where about half of the provincial deficit is there because the government is underwriting the cost of nuclear expansion in Ontario. And if you look at your most recent electricity bills, you'll see the extent to which the government is subsidizing what would otherwise be a much larger increase than the ones we're already getting on our power bills. And that's because the nuclear option is so expensive that if you were to put it all into the rate base, the rates would go up to a point where it would be, you know, it would be unsustainable and be unbearable for a lot of families, working families in this region. And so the financial risk here is that this, and nuclear power, by the way, is far and away the most capital intensive way that you can make electricity. At a time when the world is moving very quickly towards renewables, to wind backed up with batteries and solar and other forms of storage, and the prices of all of those options are coming down dramatically, and we see utility systems everywhere pivoting towards a new type of electricity grid that distributes the investment, that distributes the risk, that distributes the employment. It seems very risky here in Ontario to be doubling down on what is essentially a 1960s approach to the way you build your electricity system, which to put all of your eggs in a very small number of baskets, nuclear eggs at that, cross your fingers and just hope that it works out. And And this risk is made worse by the fact that these plants take so long to build. If you think about 10 years ago and how much higher the price of things like heat pumps and solar panels and all of that was compared to today, during the time that it takes to construct this plant, those options are going to continue to get cheaper. They're going to continue to grow. And you could have a situation, and it's ironic that the Wesleyville site itself is home to a previous planning blunder by Ontario Hydro. You could have a situation where they get the approval for the plant, they dig a great big hole out there, and then the whole thing gets canceled before it's ever finished. I think that's one of the largest financial risks of this project. The failure of the Ontario Hydro and the Ontario electricity industry's planning system over the years has been quite profound. Over and over and over again, they have come forward with capital expansion plans, which in the reality turned out not to be needed. It's what bankrupted Ontario Hydro the first time about 15, 20 years ago, and they're heading towards doing it again because the planning that's going on is not being it's not taking due consideration of what the alternatives are, what the less risky strategies are.
You talked about it's going to bankrupt Ontario Power Generation. And I just wondered how you know that. What well, documentation, not, where's the math in that?
Well, that's public information. Don't you remember the Ontario government had to bail them out, restructure it, and assume their debt for the Darlington nuclear plant? And that debt was taken on by the Ontario Financial Corporation, and it's being paid off slowly. We're still paying it off on our tax bill.
All right. So that's Darlington, though. We haven't even broke ground on this, and you're already saying that it's going to bankrupt OPG this time around.
No, you didn't listen to me. What I said was that we could see a situation that will repeat history where they will once again bankrupt the utility. This project is big enough that it could do that if it turns out that the assumptions that they are using to think that they need it turn out not to be well-founded. And that's why we at Blue Dot think that there needs to be a much more careful consideration of the alternatives and the need for this plant than anything that has been put on the table so far. There's a lot of arm-waving arguments going on about how there's electrification of cars and electrification of buildings going on, and therefore we have to build electricity. But this government that we have right now is actually not encouraging heat pumps. It's not encouraging electric vehicles. And so the very things that could possibly justify a huge expansion like this are the very things that this government is not promoting. So it doesn't add up. There's a lot of reasons to question the rationale for this plant, not only for the size of it, but for the need for it more fundamentally. We haven't had any electricity growth in this province to speak of for over 20 years now. A lot of people don't realize that, but the peak demand for electricity in Ontario right now is still lower than it was in 2006, and it has not been growing. Will it start to grow again after over 20 years of being flat? Maybe, especially if we do promote electric vehicles and if we do promote heat pumps. But if we don't do that, it will continue to bumble along at a much lower level. And against that backdrop of no growth over a 20-year period, we have a proposal to build a single power plant, which would be the largest nuclear plant in the world, and which by itself would produce about a third of the electricity needs of the entire province. So it just seems like a reckless overreach. And that at the very minimum, one that needs to be much more carefully considered than what we're seeing to date.
Earlier, when you spoke, you talked about the long-term social impacts of this project. What evidence do you have that that's going to take place?
Well, first of all, setting aside the nuclear aspect of this plant, when you bring a $200 billion mega project into a county like Northumberland, which is basically a small town slash rural agricultural culture with a certain amount of bedroom community commuting content. You have what's called a boom and bust cycle that comes in. When that amount of investment comes into a county, it overloads everything, and whether it's nuclear or anything else. It is, like I said earlier, it's like a hurricane, and it will put pressure on everything from schools to sewer systems to the road infrastructure, obviously, to all of the social services, to everything that local governments have to supply for their citizens will suddenly be under stress because of the magnitude of the boom. And the boom is temporary. And during the boom, it may seem like things are great, but what then happens is when the construction is finished and only a skeleton crew is left to operate the plant compared to the construction workforce, all of that, you get the bust side of the cycle. And so this boom and bust phenomenon is extremely well documented. If you Google boom and bust, you will see hundreds of examples. Many of them, in fact, are nuclear power plants. Some of them involve nuclear power plants that were started and never finished in the United States, Sweden, Spain, and various other countries. And so I don't think that there's any question about the social disruption that comes with a boom and bust, a large sort of mega project that triggers a boom and bust cycle in a community like Northumberland County.
The mayor, when I was talking to her, she talked about this memorandum of understanding that they've signed. And part of that process, though, isn't that to negotiate costs like this? And shouldn't that be part of that negotiation? I mean, isn't that the opportunity where these kinds of concerns that you're raising get to be addressed? Like, how much are you going to pay for hospital expansion? Or are we going to need, new schools or whatever other things that we may need as we go through this process? I mean, isn't that the point of having the memorandum of understanding and having these negotiations?
That should definitely be the focus of the local governments in those negotiations, without question. It's interesting, there's an agency in Ottawa called the Integrated Assessment Agency, and it's going to be their job to review the proposal to build this plant, including giving it its nuclear license to operate, should it be built. And when OPG tabled its proposal a little over a month ago, and there were, just a few weeks given for people to respond, there were over 800 people, mostly local residents and organizations, that responded on that website. But there were also responses from, for example, the city of Durham. There were responses from Kincardine up at the Bruce plant, both of whom had been through this with hydro, and both of whom were ringing the cautionary bells for Northumberland and Port Hope, that things may look great at the beginning when you're being courted, but once they get their approvals and once they've got you on the hook for the construction phase of this project, it can be very difficult to cope with the disruption that it causes your community, never mind to get hydro to pay for that disruption. And then you have the period after the construction is finished, of course, where you're stuck with all of this expanded infrastructure. You've got to keep supporting it and running it, but hydro will not be there anymore at that point to, make the capital contributions that you should be able to negotiate some of that now. Yes.
So you were talking about the Impact Assessment Agency of Canada, were you not? Is that the agency?
That's right. I'm sorry. I gave it the wrong name.
Speaking of that, then, one of the submissions to the agency calls on Ontario Power Generation, the body responsible for generating power in our province, to include an evaluation of alternatives. And a study was done by OPG, though, this past November it was released, that looked at alternative forms of energy. Now, you mentioned this earlier. Why is that not good enough?
Is this the IESO study you're referring to?
It is.
And what's the date on it?
November of 2025, just a few months ago, it was released. It was
right.
And it has a climate change plan in it.
And let's for a minute assume that study is good enough. The problem we have right now is with the process. The Impact Assessment Board is responsible for considering arguments of the need for and the alternative to the project. And they are saying that they are not going to do that. OPG's summary to the Impact Assessment Board flat out states, we're not looking at alternatives. We don't think we have to. Basically, the argument is that the government is telling us we have to build this plant. And so there's no point in arguing over whether it's needed. We've got to do it. We're mandated. That's the core of it. And the alarm bell that this sets off or should set off is that the very reason that assessments, environmental assessments, and impact assessments like this board carry out have the consideration of need included in their mandate is that the last thing you want to do is approve any project if it's not necessary. Why take the risk for any environmental damage if it turns out there's no really established need for the project? And you especially want to do that when the proponent is the government. At least when a private company comes forward with a proposal for a factory or a plant that needs to be assessed, you can take some comfort from the fact that you have private investors that are willing to put their money on the line to build it, and no doubt that they've looked at the alternatives and the competition before making that decision to go ahead. But we have a situation in Ontario where the proposals for these big power plants are coming at best from a public corporation and at worst from the cabinet, which is really where we've gotten into trouble in the past. When the cabinet starts making business decisions about what the next power plant should be or whether there should be a new power plant, that's where things have gone off the rails. It happened in the late 70s, it happened in the late 80s, it happened in the early 2000s, and we're about to go into the fourth round that I've seen in my lifetime, where we've got essentially a political decision to expand the power system that would never stand the up to scrutiny. At least the evidence that's been there to support the need for that would not stand up to the kind of scrutiny that a project of this size really deserves.
Well,
And the risk is enormous. The risk to Port Hope, the risk to Northumberland County, the risk to the ratepayers and the taxpayers of Ontario. And don't forget that at the same time that they're proposing the largest nuclear power plant in the world, they're proposing at the same time to expand the plant up in the Bruce that would make it the second largest nuclear plant in the world. So they're talking about adding another, I think it's three over 3,000 megawatts up in the Bruce on top of the 10,000 megawatts here. It's more than half the size of the current system. And they have simply not established that this makes any sense. It's also true.
what makes this the alternatives better? I mean, what makes wind, solar, energy conservation so much better as a strategy?
Oh my gosh. You need to take a look at what's going on with these technologies, Robert. They are the fastest growing source of new electricity generation in the world. They are growing faster than not just nuclear, which is not really growing. They're growing faster than fossil fuels. There was more money invested in wind and solar and renewables last year globally, by far, than there was in the fossil fuel infrastructure. That line got crossed a number of years ago. The hyper growth rates of wind and solar and batteries are one of the big stories in the energy system over the past 10 years. We have now have jurisdictions like in South Australia and California that are getting huge percentages of their electricity from renewables that were not hardly using at all 10 years ago. This is one of the biggest risk factors surrounding this plant, is that we're going back to basically a 20th century steam generation way of making electricity at a time when the rest of the world is moving to these new technologies, which have demonstrated to be cheaper and which are demonstrated to be better in a number of ways. You asked how they're better. First of all, the risk gets distributed. When a wind turbine fails, and they do fail catastrophically now and then, it's one turbine. We have 7,500 turbines in this country. There's 500,000 in the world. When one fails, it's no big deal. It gets fixed. It gets back online. The lights don't even flicker. When a nuclear plant fails, it's a big deal because it represents such a percentage, high percentage of the total supply of electricity. We see this in Fukushima. It ruined the company that owned it, which was similar in many ways to OPG. It had a mix of hydro and nuclear. It pushed huge costs onto the Japanese economy as a whole. It was an enormous, and probably close to $500 billion in economic costs associated with that one accident. You don't get accidents like that with renewables. They look a lot more like the way that nature itself manages risk by distributing it and by having systems that can recover from risk and which are resilient. Nuclear is a very brittle technology in that regard, and it's inherently risky. So I would argue, in contrary to the premise behind your question, that wind and nuclear are the fastest growing sources in the world. They are far and away the cheapest on a per kilowatt basis, even when you add in the batteries. They are safer, obviously, and they protect us against inflation in the sense that they're almost all capital. There's no fuel costs. They cost very little to operate. And so once you build them, you don't have to worry like you do with nuclear, where you have to worry about the cost of fuel, and which is going to probably be enriched uranium from the U.S. and so on. And so they're inflation proofers. Another advantage about these renewable and distributed resources is you can build them quickly. So when you combine the fact that they can get built quickly and that they're each individual unit is not that big, you can tailor the amount that you build year by year to what's actually happening. You don't have to make a bet like you do with nuclear on what the demand for electricity is going to be 15 years from now when you finally finish the plant. And so the distributed resources are a much superior set of technologies to use, especially when you're in a dynamic changing situation like we are now, where the last thing that you want to do is make a huge bet on something that's going to take 15 years to build, by which time the world will have changed in a way that makes the plant obsolete.
So if in your submission that you made to the agency, there were concerns raised around what was the term used was community character. What does that mean? And what are you talking about when you talk about those impacts?
Well, this is back to the boom and bust phenomenon. You're going to have a big construction force on site for a period of 10 years or so, thousands of working workers. Some of those workers will be local. Some of them will be local, but only temporarily here. They'll be overwhelmingly male. It's just the nature of the construction workforce. And so it changes your community.
So the things that you mentioned in the submission were things like the rural nature of Northumberland, agriculture, and the fact that we're a retirement community. Could you speak to those?
Well, I think that's the point I was trying to get at is that the values that draw people to Northumberland County, the somewhat slower pace of life, the fact that you can, as compared to the city or even to the outer suburbs in Oshawa and Whitby, the fact that you can still meet and greet your neighbors when you're walking down Main Street, the fact that the employment and economic growth, it's been slow, but it's been proceeding at a pace that you can manage. All of those values that characterize a small town, rural and agricultural county like Northumberland will be, I would argue, not just threatened, but overwhelmed by the changes that would come from a project of this magnitude on the shore of Lake Ontario down by Wesleyville. This will be And some people may say, well, it's inevitable. Northumberland was always going to become a suburb of Toronto, so we might as well get on with it. But this will make it happen very quickly. This will be the suburbanization of Northumberland County.
In this,
that's not. I grew up here. That makes me sad. I would rather try and preserve the values that have made this such a special place to live and to grow up in and to work in. I can see a project of this magnitude threatening those values.
In the submission to the agency, there was a call for more time for public comment. And I wondered why that was, because we're just starting the process. There are already a number of groups like yours holding public meetings and educational opportunities. So why so impatient? I mean, even the mayor says there's going to be lots of public consultation. What's your concern?
Why go quickly? I mean, turn that question around. Why? What's the rush? The comment period was very short. It's actually quite remarkable that in spite of that, hundreds and hundreds of individuals and organizations were able to get online and express their view. And by the way, they ran about 20 to 1, if not opposed to the plan, taking the position that Blue Dot that we take, which is we need a whole lot more deliberation on this before we pull the trigger on the biggest nuclear power plant in the world going in at Wesleyville. The last thing we need is to end up with history repeating itself out there, where instead of having the eyesore that's been sitting there for 30 years because of another one of Hydro's planning mistakes, we have a half-finished gigantic nuclear plant that should never have been started in the first place and wouldn't have been if we'd just taken the time and let the process be, you know, fully, let there be a fulsome process and a fulsome community discussion with all the different aspects and all the positives and minuses being put out in the open where people can think about them. This is being pushed through. We're seeing a lot of propaganda. The politicians seem to, most of them seem to be mesmerized by the idea that they can get a few million dollars now. And I guess worry about the problems that will come with a plan of this magnitude later. And I just think, I don't see the reason why this needs to be railroaded. If history had not shown us so many instances of where Hydro went roaring in with a plan like they did with those gas plants in the early 2000s, when they said we can't wait for any kind of process or assessment, we have to build them, and the cabinet, I think that was a Liberal government at that time, said yes, go ahead and build them, let's not stop and think about it because we got to have them. Before that, in 1989, Hydro tabled a massive expansion plan. None of those reactors were ever built, partly because there was an environmental assessment, and that slowed things down just enough that before that environmental assessment ever finished, Hydro took its proposal for the plant off the table. It happened again 10 years before that. In the mid-70s, they tabled an enormous expansion plan that would have involved dozens of nuclear reactors and dozens of new coal plants, all of which would have been built and online by about 2006. You know, that's when I first got involved. The government formed a royal commission because they couldn't understand how Hydro had gotten so far off the rails in terms of its planning. That was the Porter Royal Commission. And once again, before that commission was finished, Ontario Hydro had taken all of those proposed nuclear and coal plants off the table because, as it turned out, they hadn't really thought through the need for those plants in a very thoughtful or effective way. And it became obvious to them over time that they had made a mistake. And now they could very well be making the same mistake that we've seen from them in the past with this proposed plant at Wesleyville.
Is there really any chance of this project being stopped? I mean, the levels of government that are involved, the billions of dollars being spent or projected to being spent, the commitment of jobs and economic benefits and so on. I mean, is it not just a foregone conclusion and all of this is going to just be a lot of political theater?
It's not a foregone conclusion. As I was saying a little bit earlier, we have seen many, many instances in the past where OPG or its predecessor, Ontario Hydro, has put a proposal like this on the table and the plant never ended up being built. It was probably never because there was a small group of citizens that spoke up, but it was in every instance because the internal illogic of the proposal and the cost of the proposal and the fact that the need for it and the alternatives to it had not been sufficiently understood by the proponent. Those are the reasons that the plants have been stopped in the past. That's why That's why we never got any of those power plants that were proposed in the 1970s, because none of them were ever needed. We never got any of, not one of the power plants that were in the 1989 demand supply plan, because it turned out none of them were needed. And it's why in the end, the gas plants were a mistake as well in the early 2000s, because and they eventually, you know, the one in Oakville, for example, was never built. No, it wasn't because they were stopped in the sense that I think your question implies. It was because they were bad ideas that didn't deserve to be completed because they didn't make sense economically, and they would have committed the province to capital expenditures that would not have been recoverable and which would take the energy system of the province in a backward direction. And all of those factors are at play here.
So where do you go from here? Where does Blue Dot go from here?
Well, in terms of what Blue Dot's going to do, we're just going to keep putting information out there. As I said, we try to, I mean, I feel fairly passionately about this personally, as you can probably tell. But Blue Dot as an organization takes a very measured, evidence-based approach to its work. It wants to educate the public locally. It wants to encourage people to inform themselves about this and not just rely on what they're hearing from the proponent for the project, but also listen to some of the other perspectives on this. And we're just going to be trying to, you know, do what good citizens do, I would argue, which is promote the democratic process and the open discussion of the issues that this proposed plant would bring into our county.
Ralph Torrey, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
That was Ralph Torrey, spokesperson for Blue Dot Northumberland. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.